I see this as the Harry Potter approach, you know. In the beginning, you have to learn the basic magic spells, yeah, like Wingardium Leviosa or something. And then later, then you can also use the more advanced spells, yeah.
And the forbidden spells are equivalent to Choice, Tertium Non Datur, and there are three forbidden ones, right, in Harry Potter or in the Fertilisher?
Hi, yeah, welcome to one of our in between premises, right? Welcome, and what do you are better at this, Dennis? I remind people to subscribe, to buy us a coffee, and yeah, to hype,
comment,
or whatever,
like,
or comment, hype, and do all sorts of nice things, and tell your friends about it if you like it. If you don't like it, keep quiet about it. That's okay. Okay, Dennis, what shall we talk about today?
Yeah, there's one thing, and I mean, we were thinking about having like a more computer AI focused series even within that, and I mean, something quite related to that is interactive theorem proving. So, and maybe mm-hmm. I wanted to have like a basic episode, what is interactive theorem proving? Do you know one or two provers? And you use that in your education, right, in teaching. That would be something I would like to talk about.
I'm now using Lean in a second year logic course, which is called Introduction to Formal Reasoning, which is actually compulsory in the second year. So my goal here is to teach people basically a predicate logic, how to express yourself in predicate logic. Yeah, to have a language where you can make precise statements. I mean, this is something even computer scientists, I think, are interested in, because you find often when you make statements in English or German or whatever, that they are a bit vague and open to different interpretations. And what you want to do is sometimes when you want to talk about programs, or you want to make systems you implement, whatever, you want to make precise statements. So I think it's good for computer science to understand what this means. And so to do this, we use Lean as a logical language, and as a language where you can also express proofs. And I think that's quite important, because I mean, the approach is a bit different than mathematics. In mathematics, people learn proofs by doing lots of them, and they learn them in a sort of semantic way, or actually semantically, but then there are also these proof techniques, yeah, like you learn induction, proof by contradiction, and so on. But it's a bit sort of still vague, I think it's sometimes difficult to know whether a student actually understands what is meant by a proof or what's not, because you can ask them to prove something which is false, and they will come up with a proof in many cases. Yeah. So to have the idea of a proof as a sort of actually very convincing statement, or that at least convinces yourself, hopefully the teacher as well, is actually not so easy. And I think to use an interactive proof system is quite helpful, because I give them a number of things to prove, and some of them are actually not true, and then they sit there and try to prove it, and it's quite interesting. Sometimes I asked them to prove that for all x, the exist of y implies x, with that some relation r x y holds, then implies that there exists an x that for all y, so that you can commute quantifiers, and they were then trying to prove this, and we have this lab, and they said, I'm stuck here, I can't prove this. And then I say, hey, what about if everybody loves somebody, is there somebody who is loved by everybody? And they say, no, oh yeah, we can't prove this, you know. So to navigate this question of what's actually provable and what is not, and what is valid and what is not valid, I find it extremely helpful to use an interactive proof assistant. Now, obviously, it has got some other ideas behind it, that there are interesting applications in providing formal evidence for important properties of programs, which is quite laborious to do by hand. But now we have the help of AI, so it actually becomes now more feasible to verify software, because you can use AI to do at least most of the donkey work in verification. But important what the output of the AI is then is a formal proof which can be independently verified. So understanding interactive proof system now becomes even more important in the age of AI, right? And while you in the end you want to delegate the boring proof tasks to the AI, you need to have an understanding of the person using the AI what a proof actually is, and then once you understand this, then you can ask an AI to help you.
One tiny question there. As far as I'm aware, Lean is not so heavily used in this program verification in comparison to something like maybe Iris, Rock, or others. But it's more used in the math community.
Yes. So Lean is very close to Rock, or what was called Coq earlier, but for some reasons they changed the name.
No idea. Don't say the old name too often, otherwise we YouTube bans our reach.
Okay, after the male chicken, the French word for male chicken. I'm not sure what's happening, but yes, Lean was implemented by Leonardo de Mura, who already had these proof systems, and he wanted to have a language in which he can also express more generally proofs. I think he initially used Rock, which wasn't Rock at the time, but I'm not allowed to say this. And then he decided to implement his own system, which is basically in spirit very similar to Rock. It's called Lean because it's smaller and faster, and so lots of things which he didn't like about this French system he tried to fix. But there isn't a fundamental difference, but historically Lean became was then very much used by mathematicians. Like, we had already Kevin Buzzard, who was one of the main protagonists. They started now building this MathLib, but I think Lean is now also increasingly used for software verification and similar things.
And then the other question, the Lean is often sold to be rather classical in comparison yes. to some other provers. Is your yes. course simply classical, or?
No, my course is intuitionistic aware, as you may imagine. So I start with explaining this idea of having evidence for a proposition, and then I introduce this compared with truth tables, and we notice that there are things which are provable in truth tables which are not provable by evidence. So for my main example is, if you know that I don't have dogs and cats, do you know whether I don't have dogs or I don't have cats? I would say, if you think of evidence, you have evidence that I don't have dogs and cats forever, they're not fighting or whatever. But you don't know whether it's because I don't have dogs or I don't have cats. Yeah, could have neither, right? But if you look at the truth table, then it turns out it's a classical tautology, right? And so we discuss this difference, and we say, okay, look, certain things you have to use classical logic and for other things not. And so I have introduced the idea of logic poker. You get 10 propositions, and now you have to either prove them or say that they're not provable, or prove them using classical logic. Yeah. So you have to classify them, and so you lose points. So if you prove something provable intuitionistically using classical logic. So famous counterexample is it's not that P if and only if not P. It's not the case that P is equivalent to not P. Yeah. How would you prove this?
So can you say it again? So it's not the case
not
P if and only if. Not
P. This is actually the core of the Russell paradox, right? I mean,
if and only if one not P.
Yeah. Not
okay. Brackets.
P if and only if not P. Not open brackets. It's not the case.
I mean,
that
I grew up classically. I would start with tertium non datu right away.
Yeah. But you think you need it?
What's the construct? Now that you ask, no, but normally I guess I would have.
Okay, I can tell you how it works. If you want to prove that P, if and only not P, implies false, right?
Mm-hmm.
So P implies not P, implies P implies false. Then you have not P. If you have not P, you also have P, and you have P and not P, you have false.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, this is something that looks classic, more classic than it is.
Yes.
But it's just the law of non-contradiction somehow, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yes, yes.
So after a while, maybe I could have guessed it.
It's provable intuitionistically. It's dual. The law of exclude middle is not provable intuitionistically.
Cool. One aspect, I recently was in a talk from where a system called Waterproof was presented, and this was like for math educators in Eindhoven, I think, who built up on VerboSLEEN, and they had like a system that really helped students to, for instance, introduce variables and do this busy work, so to speak. So it's something. And you don't seem too few proponents of that approach.
Doesn't look like a good idea. I think students that don't have a problem understanding Lean or the syntax of Lean, and it's something they should actually learn instead of having some fancy system on top. So, I haven't looked at this waterproof, but it sounds to me a bit too close to the water then.
Yeah, but I mean...
But, sorry, I forgot to mention something. You said Lean is very classical, and the use of Lean, the users of Lean in the MATLAB is very classical, and it's sometimes very difficult to separate constructive and classical arguments in Lean, because somehow the classical arguments are built into some proofs in the MATLAB which actually don't need it. That's a bit a nuisance for the constructivist. But there are certainly systems and in many ways, Lean is rather ad hoc. It's another example in my mind of a system which is actually not so well designed being the most popular. You find this a lot in programming languages. Often the good programming languages are not so popular, but this really ad hoc one, the ones which are where the computer scientists shakes their head, they become very popular. I mean, JavaScript or name it, yeah. It's a common experience. And this also happens in the proof system. So I think there are much better interactive proof systems. And my favorite one is this one here? ACTA? Is ACTA, which is really very close to type theory and also implements HOT in cubical ACTA. So from a point of the type theoretician, I mean, both ACTA and Lean are based on type theory, but ACTA is really much more type theoretic and in many ways a much more beautiful language than Lean. But as far as popular culture is concerned, Lean is more successful. And for my module, I use Lean actually for various reasons. So one reason is that I don't really want to introduce types theory, but I'm mainly interested in predicate logic. And for Lean, you can really separate this. So that's certainly an advantage. And in ACTA, there isn't really a good way to just to separate types theory from logic. And on the other hand, since Lean is also more used in practice, it's obviously more interesting and more relevant for the students to learn it. Yeah, but my own preference is clearly for ACTA. I have an advanced module where I teach ACTA, which is called Proofs, Programs, and Types. And this is a level 4 module, which is elective, whereas the Lean module is level 2 and it's compulsory. So.
I mean, me coming from the whole other side, it's hard to convince a mathematician sometimes to use a restricted language, right? Because it's...
What would be restricted language in this case?
I mean, to a particular programming language, whichever. So, and you can, if I understand the proof, if I got the full semantics, if I know why it holds, and I cannot press this down into the exact syntax, that feels like a tedious task to learn the syntax at some point. So coming from the other side,
First, there are two arguments here. I mean, one is, which Vladimir Vovotsky himself observed, that most mathematical proofs are incorrect, right? And the question is, are they fixable or not? Yeah, which is an issue, and he suffered from this himself. So yes, you would like to know that your proofs are actually correct, and most mathematicians don't, and you don't know if you have a more complex proof whether this is correct, even though it's been reviewed in a journal, whatever, right?
I'm fine with that, but there is the opposite counter argument for making your language verbose. You also want to know whether a formal proof is 100% true, whether it's really the right definitions, whether something went wrong. So to make that human readable at the same time is also...
Yes, I mean, human readability is obviously important, but that's actually, I think, achieved to a large degree in modern proof systems. The syntax is not very different from syntax of mathematics, right?
Yeah, it might get a problem once AI is involved and produce these very long proofs with weird
detours.
No, but
AI can help you. I mean, AI helps you to bridge exactly this gap, as you said. The mathematician doesn't really want to do all this donkey work, all this detailed sort of syntactic fiddling, but that's exactly where they can use AI to help them. So I think.
But I was talking now about automat. So if you just give the problem and you have your AI and just say, "Oh, find a Lean proof," this Lean proof can be very, very long and have weird detours and.
Right, but usually you would turn your big theorem into lemmas, and then ask the AI to help you with the lemmas. I think as a mathematician, you want to. Use your high-level argument, maybe in some cases some argument can be found by a prover or by an AI. In some cases, the AI may not be able to do it. But what you can do is then bridge the gap from this high-level understanding to the low-level proof, which is actually where I see the most important application of AI to use AIs to find arguments themselves. Not sure that this I mean, yeah, there's some excitements about it, but I think mathematicians, we still want to come up with our arguments, but we want to make sure that they are correct. And then there's this, as you said, there's this gap that a mathematician doesn't, I mean, in the moment, using these proof systems requires quite a high level of specialized expertise. Yeah. And as you correctly stated, mathematicians mostly wouldn't want to gather this knowledge. There are some exceptions, but many don't want to do this. They want to continue doing research in their particular subject and don't want to spend lots of time to learn the intricacies of formal proof systems. But what I'm saying is that using the combination of AI and proof systems can help to bridge the gap. I mean, still you have to learn something. You have to understand how this proof system works. But then in a concrete application, you don't really have to do all the detailed analysis. And I'm doing this. I mean, I find using AI is quite helpful to do laborious proofs, which I can do, but it takes quite a long time. Whereas you ask Claude or ChatGPT or whatever, and they just do it, and that's what you want, no?
I mean, there is one aspect there in math education. In Germany, we have this, or we have in English as well, mathematical maturity. So you aren't allowed to use the real machinery first. You are first needed to do everything by hand and tediously.
Exactly.
And after doing it once, you can abstract away from it and just use tactics and
exactly
AI. I always call it
the Harry Potter approach, you know. In the beginning, you have to learn the basic magic spells, yeah, like Wingardium Leviosa or something. And then later, then you can also use the more advanced spells, yeah. And so what you have to master the basic spells before you can continue to the Polyjuice potion or whatever, yeah.
And the forbidden spells are equivalent to choice, Tertium non datur, and... There are three forbidden ones, right, in Harry Potter, I'm not entirely sure.
Yes, that's a good analogy. I hadn't thought about this.
You see. Yeah, that's an interesting approach. And I mean, there are two paths into the future, right? There's one of convincing people and one of different schools living next to each other, and one gets bigger or not and takes over. And I think
as you say, there are different ways to look at mathematics. It's not my goal to turn everybody into a constructivist, but what would be nice is to have some constructivity awareness in mathematics, and that's what's lacking.
That's how I grew up. So that's I can send regards to my teachers. Yeah, great. Is there any other point? I think about this AI automat, what this would mean for the mathematical community. This is another episode which we should definitely have.
Yeah, we should talk about AI and its role in mathematics.
Anything else about your teaching approach that you would love to share?
Yeah, I think it's quite fun. I mean, I find also like having these lab sessions is very good to force interaction with the students. So they are stuck on a problem and then you can help them. I wonder, I mean, AI can have a bit of a negative impact because instead of really getting their head bloody by banging it against something, which is quite something important to understand something, they have also this easy way out to ask an AI. And I don't know how to convince them.
You need to learn.
Yeah, not to do this because, I mean, I find it absolutely, they should learn how to use AI, but also if and how to use AI to support learning is actually quite effective. You can use it as a tutor. You don't understand something. You ask an AI to explain it to you, they are quite good, and they are, they can, you can have a dialogue, you can repeat, still I don't understand this, blah blah blah, and you find a dialogue which helps you. But if you have an exercise like solving a particular problem, which is supposed to really get you working and should not be easy, and then to choose the easy way out and say, okay, let's ask the AI, here's the proof, we are done. That is not helpful. And it's difficult in teaching to separate these aspects. So one is good, the other one is other not helpful.
It's really a hard task. I mean, one final word on that to say something good about the waterproof system as well. It has these tutoring functionalities, and it even has like restricted coding agents that say you could try this here, you might get stuck. So to have immediate feedback at home all the time is maybe one major benefit in comparison to the math model where you submit your homework and you forget about them and somebody grades them, then forgets about them, hands them back to you. You just see, oh, there's a mistake, but everything is not there anymore. While like if you really see the error or your variable was never introduced, then you can, might see, oh, okay, I should introduce that variable right away and understand that let epsilon be bigger than zero does some heavy lifting. It's not just there for fun.
Sure. But I think you don't need the waterproof system. You just use a proof assistant and that already gives you the feedback. And in conjunction with an AI, and in conjunction with going to a lab and ask the lab assistants for help, or the demonstrators, as they're called.
So that, if that you don't have well. Them at some point.
Yeah, if you don't have them, you ask the,
because of AI.
You ask the AI. That's no, I think, no, there is a different quality. You can use both. I mean, sometimes explanation by a human, and we have some good PhD students who are really good in explaining things, it can be helpful. But as you say, if you are on your own, then using an AI is a reasonable replacement for this, but not, you shouldn't do one or the other. It's actually the combination which works quite well, I think.
Great. So that was our third episode of About Logic Premises. And next week we will have probably something in the direction of linguistics, but I'm not entirely sure yet, so we will see that. And this was definitely not recorded right after the second episode of Premises, so there is no reason why I don't know yet what happens next week, and it's not 3 weeks in the future or whatever. Okay. Great. Then, as always, you know what you have to do, and we will see us next week with our guests. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.